Argument, United States versus Philippi, Mr. Marsh.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Mr. Vaughn. Michael Philippi was charged and ultimately convicted in the district court with the crime that is commonly referred to as lying and buying, which usually refers to, as it does in this case, a firearms offense. The indictment charged and the jury found that Mr. Philippi attempted to purchase a firearm in the Southern District of Indiana in September of 2003 when he completed the ATF form, which is referred to as the 4473. One of the questions was, do you presently have pending an indictment or information for a felony or any other case in which you might receive more than a year in prison? Mr. Philippi answered no to that question. That was the answer that resulted in his being charged with lying and buying. The indictment charged that on the date he attempted to purchase the firearm, he in fact had two felony cases pending, both of which could equally be characterized as lying and buying. His pending cases, however, were prescription fraud rather than firearms cases, but they were cases which were virtually identical to the crime with which he was charged in the indictment, that is, making a false statement in an attempt to obtain an object. Prior to the trial, I, who represented him at district court, offered to admit or offered to stipulate that he had one of those cases pending and took the position in a motion in limine prior to the trial that the court should only allow evidence of one of those two pending cases and exclude evidence of the other.
What I'd like to explore is the extent to which your stipulation would have admitted that he knew that the case was pending, because you could certainly stipulate that 35 cases were pending against him all around the country, but if he had no idea that they were there, that would not accomplish what the government needed to prove in this case.
The stipulation explicitly, Your Honor, did not offer to stipulate, nor did we offer to admit that he knew that those cases were pending. That is a separate element of the crime with which he is charged, and one that we did not offer to stipulate to.
So by the time, though, the government has to then put in the proof that he knew that these charges were pending, first of all, what's the use of the stipulation? You know, and secondly, Why is it not the case that the government, under the other half of Old Chief, basically the half that says the government's entitled to prove its case however it wants to, normally speaking, why doesn't that control here and at least make it not an abuse of discretion on the district court's part to say we're not going to go that way?
The purpose of the stipulation, of course, was to avoid the unfair prejudice of the jury finding out that he had more than one attempt to more than one case pending for attempting to purchase prescription drugs without a prescription.
But if that's what you really cared about, why weren't you willing to amend the stipulation so that it admitted the knowledge and then it was only the one?
If I had, on his behalf, stipulated that he knew that those cases were pending, I virtually would have been stipulating the case away, and I felt like would have been risking an ineffective assistance of counsel of a chronic type, which would be automatic prejudice, and that was my decision not to stipulate to that.
But at the same time, if they only agreed to only bring in one, and then he brought in all sorts of stuff, well, gee, I didn't know that, et cetera, two is better than one when you're talking about knowledge, isn't it?
Two would be better than one. I don't disagree with that, Your Honor. And I don't disagree that the evidence of the second pending case was relevant. That's not the question. The position is that the unfair prejudice of the second pending case outweighs any relevance of that. And the court said in its opinion in Old Chief that in making this judgment, the court should consider the alternative evidence which is available, the evidence which is available to the government to prove the other element, in this case, the element of knowingly. And in this case, the government had compelling evidence on both of these pending cases, both of which were offered at the trial.
Of knowledge, you mean?
Yes, of knowledge.
The fact that there were just two of them and people don't kind of unknowingly repeat this kind of behavior?
With respect to the evidence of knowledge, the government offered evidence in one case, a videotape accompanied by a transcript, in the other case, a transcript of the proceeding.
Well, how do you think the government should have proved knowledge here?
The government should have proved knowledge exactly the way it did, but only on one of these cases rather than on both of them. The position we're taking, Your
that's
Honor...
That's your whole... That's what you think?
I'm sorry.
No.
I didn't hear the question.
Isn't that a judgment? I mean, what about Judge Mannion's point? When you're trying to prove knowledge, the fact that it happened twice was highly relevant.
It is relevant. I don't dispute that, but it's also prejudicial, particularly given that both pending...
I don't understand. You can't prevent the government from presenting probative evidence just because... highly probative evidence just because it's prejudicial, right?
Well, of course...
Rule 403 says the probative value has to be clearly outweighed by the prejudicial effect. So if it's important evidence, it goes in.
But that's exactly what the court did in the Old Chief case, was said that the relevant evidence there could not be admitted because of the highly prejudicial nature, and concluded, as 403 requires, and also 404B.
But it wasn't highly probative. I mean, in many of these cases, the details of the prior offenses are not relevant at all. But when they are relevant, then they come in.
Unless the relevance is outweighed by unfair prejudice, which, of course, is our position here, that the relevance of the second of these two pending cases was outweighed by the unfair prejudice of the fact that they're...
Well, isn't that a judgment for the district judge to make?
Yeah. Well, the case is here, Your Honors, on an abuse of discretion standard, but this is not, I would suggest to the court, a routine admission of evidence case. It's more like the Old Chief case. That case was before the United States Supreme Court.
No, it's very different.
That case was before the United States Supreme Court on an abuse of discretion standard, and the court, of course, held that the evidence should have been excluded. This case is not identical to Old Chief. I acknowledge that, but I would contend that it's controlled by the spirit of Old Chief, and that it goes back, as the Supreme Court refers to in Old Chief, to the longstanding common law tradition that other bad acts are not admissible, not because they're not relevant, but because...
No, they are admissible. They're just not admissible to show propensity. They're admissible to show knowledge, modus operandi, all sorts of things.
But to the extent they're not admissible, it is because...
But they are admissible when they're admitted for a proper purpose, such as showing knowledge.
They are admissible in some purposes.
That's one of them in the rule.
That's one of them, but that's the language of 404B,
right.
Of course, and one of the elements of evaluating a 404B offer of proof by the government is exactly the same as 403, that the...
Everything's subject to 403.
Right. And that's our position, Your Honor, that in this case, evidence of the second of these two pending cases was highly prejudicial and unfairly so, and that the unfair prejudice outweighed any probative, any relevance of the offered evidence. So the stipulation, which is in the appendix to my brief, offered to stipulate to the pendency of the Vigo County pending case. Actually, in the hearing on the motion in limine, the transcript of which is in the appendix to both briefs, I amended that and offered to admit to either of the two pending cases and made clear that the purpose of that was so the jury not find out that there were two pending cases. The unfair prejudice...
But in Old Chief, why had the government wanted to introduce the details of the previous crime?
Your Honor, I don't know the motive of the prosecutors in offering
that.
That's
kind of critical, isn't it? If they just wanted to do it, you know, fill out the background or something like that, that would be very weak. If they wanted to introduce it in order to prove an element of the crime, as here, that would be very different.
It was offered, again, as I said, I don't know the motive of the prosecutor in the old Chief case. It was offered to prove the element that the person had been convicted of a felony.
No,
and
but look, just to prove the prior conviction of the felony, you just need the prior conviction. You don't have to say what it's, what the felony is, right?
Right.
That's very different from wanting to introduce this evidence of the second crime in order to bolster the inference of knowledge. I don't think that was anything like that was involved in Old Chief.
Your Honor, I acknowledge that this case is not on all fours with Old Chief, but my position is that the spirit of Old Chief compels the conclusion I've asked for in this case.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Marsh. Mr. Vaughn?
Good morning. My name is Joe Vaughn, and I'm the Assistant United States Attorney who handled the prosecution of Mr. Phillippe in the court below. The district court's finding that the probative value of
So maybe you can explain what was involved in Old Chief.
Yes, in Old Chief, you had it was possession of a firearm by a convicted felon was the charge, along with a crime of, I believe there was some kind of a violent assault that involved a weapon, in addition to the charge of being a felon in possession. The government wanted to introduce a prior conviction where I believe it was for some kind of a violent assault. Now, the purpose of introducing the prior conviction was simply to establish proof of convicted felon status and nothing more. The defense 403 argument was that while my client is charged with a crime of violence and an assault, the prior conviction is for an assault. Therefore, that's not fair because the jury could reach a verdict based on an improper basis. In this case, there were two elements. One was the fact that Mr. Phillippe was under an information for a felony for which he could be sentenced to more than 1 year in prison, and number two, that he knew that fact. There was no knowledge element at issue in the Old Chief case. Mr. Phillippe's proposed stipulation went to only the fact or the existence of that he was under an information for a felony for which he could be sentenced to more than 1 year in prison. It did not go to the knowledge element. The district court told Mr. Phillippe that its ruling on the motion in limine could be or would be different if Mr. Phillippe would stipulate that he had the knowledge. Mr. Phillippe declined to do so.
But surely Mr. Marsh is right. By the time he stipulated to the knowledge and to the prior felonies and you've got the piece of paper, he might as well be having guilty plea discussions with you, right?
I think that's a fair statement.
What's left?
I think that is a fair statement that the way that this crime is laid out, I believe there are only three elements. One, that you made a false statement that was material to the acquisition of a firearm. The statement was in connection with a firearm, and you made it knowingly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there was no issue on the materiality.
And how did you, in fact, I mean, you did have additional ways of proving the knowledge at the trial, did you not? Not just the fact that these two proceedings were out there and you didn't get into the third one, I remember.
I don't believe so. And the reason was because of a deficiency in the initial appearance procedure in each of the cases. In the Vigo County case, where Mr. Phillippe was charged with obtaining a controlled substance by fraud, the court told Mr. Phillippe that he was charged with, I believe it was a Class D felony. He could be sentenced between 6 months to 3 years, and then asked Mr. Phillippe, do you understand the charge and do you understand the penalty? There's no response from Mr. Phillippe. The court then asks, do you understand the charge? Answer, yes. The court never then asks Mr. Phillippe, well, do you understand the penalty? And that failure to ask that specific question created a deficiency in the government's proof of the knowledge element, and it also kind of opened the door for a lack of knowledge defense of, well, yes, I understood I was charged with a Class D felony, but I never knew or I never understood that I could get more than a year in prison for that. Therefore, when I looked at question 12B on that 4473 that asked me, are you under an information for a felony for which you could receive more than a year in prison? I didn't think that I was. Therefore, I did not knowingly make a false statement. There was a similar deficiency then with the initial appearance in the Tippecanoe County case. The procedure there was Mr. Philippi and other defendants are put into a small room and they watch a pre-recorded audio videotape, which spells out the penalties for a Class A, a B, a C, and a D felony, a whole bunch of rights. The prisoners all watch this videotape, and then they're brought before the judge one at a time. So Mr. Philippi steps before the judge, and the judge says to Mr. Philippi, "You heard that audio videotape, right?" And I believe Mr. Philippi says, "Yes." And the judge says, "Here's a copy of your information. You're charged with a C, which is a forgery offense, and I think the D, attempted acquisition of a controlled substance by fraud." Court kind of reads those to him and then says, "Oh, and you heard the penalties for the C and the D felonies." And then they move on to something else. So once again, by a deficiency in that process, Mr. Philippi never says, "Oh, yes, I understand that I could get 6 months to 3 years on the D or 2 years to 8 years on the C felony." You have a deficiency in the knowledge element, and it also opens the door once again on the lack of knowledge defense. And the government's position was you really need those two together, because Mr. Philippi being advised of the penalty for the felony offenses on two occasions, two different settings, two different judges, that certainly made the probability that he understood that he was facing that kind of a penalty very highly likely. And that in light of the lack of an evidentiary alternative, the district court's ruling that the probative value was not substantially outweighed by the danger of unfair prejudice was not an abuse of the district court's discretion. The burden is on Mr. Philippi to make that showing. The government's position, he has not done so. And this is not a case where a reasonable person could take a, or could not take the view that was adopted by the trial court in this case.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Vaughn.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Marsh, how many times does he have? No time. We'll give you a minute if you have anything further you'd like to say.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that. I'll only take part of it to make one point. The question on the form 4473 is, are you now under indictment or information for a felony or any other crime that is punishment of more than 1 year? So it wasn't necessary for the government to prove that the punishment was more than 1 year. Both of the pretrial proceedings in Vigo and Tippecanoe counties made clear that he was charged with felonies in those courts.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Marsh. And you were appointed, were you not?
I was.
So we thank you for your efforts on behalf of your court.
Thank you, Judge.
Next case.